that U.S. Senate has paved the way for the passage of fast-track legislation to give the White House and the U.S. Trade Representative almost unilateral power to negotiate and finalize secret anti-user trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Yesterday, a closure vote was held. This is a vote to end debate on fast track and break any possibility for a filibuster, and it passed by the minimum votes needed, 60 to 37. Today, the Senate voted to pass the legislation itself. Excuse me, that's yesterday. TPP proponents only needed 51 votes, a simple majority, to actually pass the bill, and they got it on the 60 to 38 vote. Following months and months of campaigning, Congress has ultimately caved to corporate demands to hand away its own constitutional mandate over trade, and the president is expected to sign the bill into law as early as tonight or later this week. And when they say sign the bill into law, they're talking about the fast track. Despite this defeat, she writes, our fight against undemocratic corporate-driven trade agreements should not be counted as a failure. And departing from what she has written, this isn't even a trade agreement. It's just basically a giveaway of sovereignty to corporations. And there's much more on this on WikiLeaks. I may get to that a little later in the show. Right now, it's 9:16. You're listening to live radio on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Press Watch. And I've been talking about the facial recognition threat. And it's coming. Coming soon. Coming quickly. What to do about that. And I've been talking just now about the TPP. Mara Sutton writes, this campaign has reaffirmed the power of internet users to, I think it's from Fight from the Future. I think she was writing for Fight for the Future. The power of internet users to make lawmakers more accountable to the people. She says, we effectively threw a wrench into the mechanics of Washington, proven by TPP supporters' razor-thin victory in the Senate closure vote, not to mention the series of stops and starts that delayed the passage of this bill for so many months. We put the White House on the defensive like never before. Has President Obama scrambled to win enough supports for his trade agenda to pass the bill? All of our calls, emails, tweets, and visits to our lawmakers made a big difference. Even more stunning is how we've managed to delay the official TPP talks. During the recent kerfuffle over fast track, negotiations over TPP internationally have effectively been stalled. The United States trading partners were not willing to continue talks and concede to worse digital regulations as long as it seemed that U.S. Congress had the opportunity to second-guess the agreed language. Now that fast track will be passed, TPP negotiations will likely resume in the coming weeks. This means that we, too, must keep on fighting on. She writes, we'll be laser-focused on building more momentum to defeat the TPP, as well as the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP, and the Trade and Services Agreement, the TISA, all of which contain harmful regulations. There's one silver lining to the fast-track legislation, which is that it will force the White House to release the final trade texts for 60 days before Congress votes to ratify the agreements, finally. So for this, at least, we won't be depending only on WikiLeaks to release the portions that they can actually find. So all is not lost, but we have suffered a terrible defeat with this fast-track bill. And I can't say that's surprising because, as I was saying, you know, the American people don't pay the bills in Congress. Very rich people do, and very rich people would like very much to have agreements like I was describing in previous weeks. For example, if your city wants to set up a hospital, they would have to consult with a trade regime, so-called trade regime, and with the TPP. First, and if they did not, then international hospital building corporation could sue for loss of, get this, future profits. Loss of future profits. Imagined profits. That's how oppressive it is, and really it is. The TPP, TTIP, and the TISA are very forward, very aggressive attempts to create and anti-sovereignty, a new corporate world order, in which you just don't matter. I mean, you don't matter to the extent that even when you get a law passed, it won't matter because it will be trumped by treaty law. Can't overemphasize how foul that is. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I've been talking about the Confederate flag this week, and I want to talk about a book that I consider, because it is so insidious and hidden, a book called The Bell Curve. And I'll be bringing it up in just a minute, though, because Kevin has called in. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Teresa, going back to your facial recognition, it's also going to keep pesky customers like me out of their stores. I'm the kind of person that gets home and then checks my receipt to make sure that there's no errors in it. And you know what, Teresa, it's always in their favor. Every time there's a mistake, it's always in their favor. And I'm the kind of person that goes back and tells them that. And just the other day, just between you and I, Safeway was overcharging $1 per chicken. And I caught it because I bought a couple of chickens.
You know, that's something that is increased because of the way things are done now in the stores. I mean, you don't see the actual prices as much, and the price that is entered into the point of sale device, the register, is not the same price. And so, yeah, you do have to check that.
But it's always in their favor, Teresa. It can't be a humongous coincidence, can it? Now, the point being, I brought it to their attention. I said it couldn't be just on one computer. It has to be throughout your entire system. I said, I don't want to see anybody else getting gouged like I was, so why don't you correct it? Oh, no problem. We'll do that right away. And guess what, Teresa? 2 days go by, and I go in there again. And they still hadn't been corrected. Every chicken sold in the past 1 week at the local Safeways, you've been charged $1 more for your chicken.
That's a numbers game. And that's the
it
sort
is
of
indeed.
That's the sort of thing, actually. One thing I like to do when I want action on something like that is to gather some evidence of it, put it in an essay, put together some corroborating evidence so you have two or three pages that are easily written, and get this, fax it to the state attorney general, because they read faxes. Oh, good.
I kept it all, Teresa. I kept my receipts. I kept the erroneous receipts together with the third day's receipt. And even though it was erroneous, I said to the young girl, I know it's wrong. Go ahead and ring it up that way and then give me the correct one. So I've got the wrong one, the correct one. And see, I thought, like a stupid person, I thought I'd call as a tip hotline to the local newspaper. Well, they don't care, Teresa, because they're in cahoots. They get paid by the Safeway for their ads and that they run weekly, yada, yada, yada. So they don't care.
Well, that sort of thing is really infuriating. Oh, yes, I understand that.
Thank you for using that word, because that's the epitome of the word, infuriating.
Well, yeah.
I've worked all my life since I was 18 years old. And I've had to scrimp and save, and I get screwed by the local grocery store supermarket every time you go in there, practically. Every time you go in there, you got to check. People don't do that, and they're rushed, and they know it.
Yeah, and that you're just the sort of person that they would want to exclude.
Exactly that. That's my point of the whole phone call. Even though I waited for you for over 5 minutes, I wanted you to know this. It's not just shoplifters and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's people that give a damn about the world and the conditions of the world, and things have to be corrected. And even on a small level like this is corruption, Teresa.
That's a good word for it. Yes, it is corruption. Hey, thanks very much for calling in.
Okay. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Conrad's on the air.
Hello. Yes, I want to say that this facial recognition technology is already in effect in Safeway stores in Vancouver.
Is it?
It has the effect that when you walk into a Safeway store, when one who has been marked walks into a Safeway store, even one they have not been in before, very quickly there will be on the overhead microphone they call a code 201 in the produce department, staff track you then. So this is already in effect. It's been in effect for the last year at least in Vancouver.
I wonder if there is legal recourse against this. I'd be interested to hear from a lawyer. I mean, I wonder if slander laws apply when you've been blackballed in that way. I've been blackballed from dentists For example, because of an entirely mistaken, well, originally mistaken and later just aggressive demand that I pay $8,000 for tooth work that I never got. Huh. And when I go to a dentist now, they balk at serving me because they read this blackballing thing that they circulate to each other, and I wonder if it's legal.
And this facial recognition at Safeway stores in Vancouver seems to be for even offenses such as reading, standing at the magazine counter, reading magazines for free. That's an offense, and that will get you marked.
How do you know this?
Yes.
How do you know this?
Through personal experience, let me say.
Oh, okay. So you've encountered this system.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call.
You're welcome.
Well, I think that we're going to have to get on the ball and thwart this system in various ways. I don't think that the infrared barrette or hat is sufficient, although I do think that as a gesture of defiance and an effective self-defense measure, it should become common. And I'm serious about getting together with whoever wants to do this sometime this summer and actually soldering some together so that we can demonstrate how you can be free from that sort of surveillance. But to recap, it's 9:26. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I've been talking about a new corporate technology that apparently is spreading faster than even I realized, in which facial recognition technology and computer databases can be used to mark you as an undesirable person, whether that is just or not. And I'm going to guess that there's going to be a very high percentage, just because of the way these things work, going to be a very high percentage of people who are going to be unjustly excluded from stores. And I also would like to complain that it will be effectively an unjust punishment and a punishment without due process of law, because if you can't go into, I mean, this is just a corporate country. It has corporate capitalist institutions where you need to buy groceries and sundries and things. And if you can't enter the store without being slandered by an automatic system that reads your face, well, that's just that's unacceptable. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Pam is on the air.
Hello, Teresa.
Hi.
Nice to have a whole hour. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because yesterday I was at City Hall when I thought that we were going to be testifying regarding the Pembina, and which is the propane facility that's been proposed for North Portland.
Yes.
And instead, we were treated to, I guess, the, climate action plan was also scheduled. And there was this love fest of panel after panel and, you know, expert after expert, all congratulating themselves and the mayor and the city for a job well done. Finally, after a couple of hours, people were allowed to come up, you know, who had signed up and speak. And about 38 people, I believe, had actually signed up to testify. And it just strikes me that people are frustrated, so things happen. You know, we have outbreaks in City Hall occasionally of rudeness, of anger. And this is partly why, because the city doesn't really listen to us.
Well, yeah, because there's that essential lack of respect.
Yeah.
Well, we're a little off topic here. Do you have any comments on the facial recognition technology? Or I was about
well,
to talk
you
about
for bringing it up. I really wasn't aware of that. I know that when you walk into a store, your face immediately, or you know, shows up on a television screen. I'm not really comfortable with that. And also, I got to be a juror this year with a case from somebody from Walmart was accused of weighing two things and only paying for one at their checkouts, which I don't even use those kind of checkouts. I think they're horrible, not giving people jobs. And it was claimed that their store cameras were good enough to read a message on somebody's cell phone.
Wow.
And that this person had been followed all over the store. Well, we found him innocent because there was no video produced. But it did catch my eye that you know, our video system is so fine that we can read a message off your cell phone.
Yeah, that's creepy, isn't it?
That is really freaky. So anyway, thank you very much, Teresa. It's good topics.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's the combination of being able to read your face and combine it with a database that they maintain. I mean, this has been a problem with cops for a while. It used to be if you had some youthful indiscretion and you'd been busted for some misdemeanor or less or whatever in one town, well, one way to deal with it was you just leave that town and didn't have to worry about it after that. But now in the computer age, everything that you ever did follows you around. And more than that, your arrests follow you around, not necessarily information about convictions or whether the arrest was justified. And for the cops who use the system, the idea that an arrest would not be justified is foreign to them. So, for example, I was arrested years ago for yelling at a couple who confronted me with their gun for no reason, and they were able to. This is another funny thing about the injustice system is if you've got connections, really, even if you don't, if you just want to swear out a complaint against someone, you can cause them all sorts of problem. And the system, as it exists now, determines whether you have money. It doesn't determine whether you are innocent or guilty, and you have to prove that you are innocent. You're not. There's no longer the presumption of innocence in the U.S. system, and all of this is made much worse by computerized records. So I will be followed for the rest of my life by arrest for, let's see, it was menacing and something else, and resisting arrest. And cops just love to see resisting arrest. So I do feel in danger whenever I get stopped. That's the way these systems work, and this is the way that this facial recognition system is going to work for these stores. And there's no reason that this system, now that, as they say, it is so much cheaper and more effective, would be restricted just to major retailers. This is as if we had gone around all our lives with our driver's license and our passports and a rap sheet pinned to our shirts. We are losing the last shreds of privacy, and because information is abused in the way that it is, because we're human beings, really, we will suffer thereby. And I'm interested in what you have to say about it. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Mitch is on the air.
Yes, I'm not sure I can answer that question. What prompted me to call, Teresa, was when I heard the first of your two callers citing Safeway in their consumer complaints, I was actually found it refreshing to hear that woman think her way through some of the fallacies that have been coming up in media studies and journalism courses for the last 50 years, institutionalized untruths. You know, this notion that there's this, she didn't have the language for it, but if she had been a communications major or a journalism student, she'd have been told that, well, there is this firewall between editorial and advertising. And yet she, in her own sort of native way and self-discovering way, you know, figured out, hey, these newspapers that, you know, more than ever depend on whatever advertising they can get away from the online, you know, cyber market, are now, you know, that there never was a firewall, actually.
Yeah, they don't want to lose the Safeway coupon section.
Yeah, I mean, editors used to actually laugh at some of their students that came out of J-school programs because they were getting these theoretical notions about firewalls and other such things, and editors just expected that their staff would self-censor themselves and know better than to get everybody's paycheck in trouble. So, you know, economics is at the bottom of everything. I was hoping that you would forward them, though, to this very useful online resource called The Consumerist, which takes not only consumer complaints, but actually filters them through the media prism of how some longstanding consumer complaints, like the recent stories that bubbled up through the surface about Whole Foods falsely pricing
Is that consumerist.com?
Yes. Well, I don't know if it's a .com or a .org, but if you just type the consumerist into a search engine.
Okay, well, I've typed in consumerist.com, and I've got headlines about the Supreme Court. Millions of Americans no longer at risk to lose health insurance subsidies with SCOTUS ruling. It says McDonald's, fewer Happy Meals are being ordered with sodas. It says class action settlement means AB InBev must refund customers for faux import Becks. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yes.
Is that the right?
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Right. Yeah, I get a weekly feed from them, and reading their articles, again, they're unusual in the consumer business, because even on advertiser-driven network news, there is usually a consumer feature. But what's unique about the consumerist is they're usually somewhere in their article, they will talk about the media dynamics about what has kept this particular rising consumer complaint or class action under the radar of coverage. And so that's useful to always increase people's media savvy.
Okay, consumerist.com then. Thank you very much for that.
One other thing about all the TPP and TPA trade protests that even I called in when Pear was substituting for you last week and called Pear's attention to the fact that in 2015, if you type KORUS, Chorus, which was the first Asian trade agreement that Obama enacted after he got elected in 2008, It was first drafted by the people that George Bush charged to draft it, because, again, it was with South Korea, and it was a secret trade deal, and it couldn't pass under Bush's presidency because there was still a Democratic majority in the House. So Obama gets elected. We don't know when he gets elected, or I think most of us didn't know he was going to become the president from Wall Street, that he would then refurbish the Bush trade agreement that he had corporate leaders in Korea and the U.S. draft, and that Bush couldn't get through. Obama got it through in 2011, and in 2014, Congress finally issued a report on the trade deal scoreboard for Chorus, K-O-R-U-S. Type that into a search engine, and you will find that in 2014, yes, the New York Times cited it as having tripled the imbalance of trade with Korea, and that even the Korean auto workers who were flooding the market, their companies were flooding the market, the auto workers were getting cut because the trade deal only benefited the few oligarchical families in Korea that control the manufacturing sector. And so even though Korea has tripled their trade surplus with the United States from this 2011 first trade deal, their workers are dissatisfied, just as we would be dissatisfied if our media in 2015 told us about it. Because from the September 2014, when this congressional report came out doing the scoreboard, nobody in 2015, except for one 10-minute segment on a local ABC News affiliate, has mentioned the word Chorus when I run that into Google search.
Okay, well, I took your advice. I pulled up Economic Policy Institute headline, U.S.-Korea trade deal resulted in growing trade deficits and more than 75,000 lost U.S. jobs. So,
Can you ask Yenka why even KBOO hasn't pestered our Democratic legislators with explaining why they would want a TPA, TPP before they undo Chorus and NAFTA?
Well, you can ask Janka that directly. Just give her a call.
I've sent her emails. I can't get an answer.
Well, that's you and Janka. Don't want to step in that.
No, but I mean, look around you. The progressive media isn't mentioning it. The labor unions are not mentioning Chorus. Nobody mentions Chorus, and that allows Obama to get up there and say, well, don't be stuck in the past always mentioning NAFTA.
NAFTA, right. And so there's this chorus.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for bringing that up. And I will, I'll just bookmark that and have a look at it and get up to speed on it.
I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Number to call 503-231-8187. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and Don's on the air.
Hey, Teresa. I wanted to get back to the facial recognition and information gathering. Hey, first thing is when the cops pull you over and when they start investigating somebody, they do a background check on them. And the courts have upheld it, saying that the the cops will claim that they're looking for people. They want to know if you're a flight risk. That's why they do it. But they really do. They do it because they want to know if you can afford a real lawyer. And so if you can't, then you get stuck in the system with somebody who's got 1,000 other cases. So, so this facial recognition thing is just scary because it's just part of the same practice where the Wall Street people who launder money for FIFA don't go to jail, but FIFA does, and they mess with the foreign currencies, they don't go to jail. So this facial recognition thing will be used by the stores and everybody in the corporate, just like the criminal justice.
And certainly system. Against protesters.
Absolutely. Anybody who's standing up against the government will be part of the target. You'll get electrocuted every day, every night. And thankfully, they stopped electrocuting me about 2 days ago, Teresa, so I don't know what's happening, but I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Okay, so we're talking about this facial recognition computer software that is being hooked up in corporations around the United States and around the world, and its effect in, well, I would say identifying you, but basically what I wanted to talk about is the fact that it is and is going to be abused and is changing the nature of your relationship with corporate America. It allows them to immediately obliterate your privacy everywhere you go. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And David's on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I've got a tip on that, the facial recognition software.
All right.
From what I've heard, it doesn't, the infrared LEDs don't work. But what's supposed to work is makeup, where you do this kind of like asymmetrical makeup that obscures certain details of your face, like I think where the bridge of your nose, the sort of the top of the bridge of your nose and the outlines of your eye sockets. And there's actually some very funny, like, people who have done it as art projects. They do this trying to be very fashionable, like asymmetrical makeup with
right.
black and white,
you know,
lines.
I know what you're talking about, and the criticism that the infrared LEDs don't work is partly true, because you need to set it up with, you need to get some pretty powerful ones, and you need to have enough battery. Otherwise, it just doesn't blur enough, and there's been some failures in that regard, but both of those techniques can work.
So it's really, I didn't realize that you could work with enough power for the infrared LEDs. I thought it just didn't work.
Oh, they work.
Oh, great.
Let's see. I do not have the website. I bookmarked some of the websites, but rather than do that, well, I would just say look up the details on them, and you'll find that information that, you know, sometimes they do fail because they're just not bright enough. And also, you've got, and that's why I suggest wiring in a visible LED, because if you go around and your battery's, you know, at half power, they're not going to work, and you need to know what the strength is of your system. But it should be all... I should think that once it's demonstrated well, somebody's going to want to make a profit by manufacturing a good, reliable one. So that's what I'm trying to kind of promote.
Yeah. I'd like to see it become a fashion to wear those. That sort of... I mean, I'm kind of the worst person to try to start a new trend.
Yeah, I like that.
So
why not a hoodie? Yeah, I mean, there's more information than that as well. As some of the... facial recognition actually depends on not just visible but infrared, so you have to use certain types of face paint so that you're able to alter your face in that way. For example, you can have a stripe of alcohol on your face and it alters your infrared signature.
Huh. Yeah, well, thanks for the information and just the great work you do on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And David's on the air. Hi, David. James is on the air.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
This facial recognition technology is terrifying, considering that we live under a neo-Stalinist type regime, and that all these corporations are nothing more than governing bodies under this regime. I mean, it's just it is Big Brother just completely clamping down.
It really is, and I get so many examples in my head when you say that sort of thing. Like, do you remember when BP fouled the beaches, and then all of a sudden BP owned the beaches, and
right.
you couldn't go to the beaches, you couldn't go to your own public beaches because they would kick you off, and law enforcement personnel weren't there, but then would back them up, would back up the BP thugs as if they were law enforcement personnel, and that was not the result of some legislation. That was just complete capitulation to corporate rule. It's like
right.
corporate. I mean, when the corporation can just pick you up and throw you around, you've lost everything.
You know, I've been trying my best as an advocate for our federal system to talk to people on the left, and I get so frustrated. Because my goal is to try to bring people together, not to divide, not to, you know, I believe that the perspective that I have can bring us together, and I get so frustrated. I call into some people, and I'm not even allowed to express what I have to say. And KBOO, and I hear people say that they allow different points of view, but I don't see it, and you do. I know you do, and I'm very grateful for you for doing that, because you do listen to me. I haven't called into you in a while, but it is very frustrating that the oligarchs have us divided. They basically divided liberals in this country. The liberals are on the extreme right and the extreme left, and we need to understand that. And we need to unite, and then the moderates will follow.
There's a lot of work to be done, to be sure. I figure my job is to get out information and also emphasize certain information. And another thing that I try to do on my program is basically to encourage the left and the progressive community and anyone who cares to actually take action, to feel like there's someone out there. I'd say increasingly, there are a lot of better educated people on these sort of issues in the U.S., and so I have some hope that we can move forward and we can actually change things, even though it seems like these are our darkest days with these giant corporate hegemony multinational agreements coming down. I also see people, well, getting smarter and acting together, so we shall see how this all comes out, I guess.
I'll just have to have patience and faith, I guess, and just keep moving forward and not try to do my best and not get in that bunker-type mentality, you know, so I'm...
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Because I want to.
Thanks for calling in.
You have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye. Okay, we've been talking about facial recognition technology and the fascism of corporate rule. And number to call is 503-231-8187. A second topic that I would like to bring up, if there's sufficient time, is the book The Bell Curve, which I want to point out is in some ways worse than the Confederate flag. But I am happy to talk with you about the first topic the whole hour. Sometimes it works out that way, so if that's the way it works out, that's the way it works out. And Roy is on the air. Hi, Roy.
Oh, I just want to compliment that guy that was on before me. When I was a kid, my father was a Democratic City Committeeman. He became a Nixon Republican. I went from Catholic school to a Quaker private school where my friends were more like Republicans. In fact, I was shocked. I was surrounded by Republicans one day.
Nixon was a Quaker, wasn't he?
He became a Nixon supporter, my father. But the teachers at Penn Charter were all arch leftists. I mean, Russia wasn't even an enemy. And this thing where I agree with him completely, the populists have to understand each other. For example, it's often said that, oh, you know, we stopped Chinese immigration to California in the late 19th century because we were anti-Chinese. No, because Crocker was paying to bring in all these workers to just fire everybody, and the act is, you know, they've painted a picture of the working class, which I grew up with in that neighborhood that my father was a lawyer, went to night school, as total Archie Bunkers. And further, I remember watching Archie Bunker. He's a Republican, he's a Protestant. Every Archie Bunker I knew was a Catholic, and they were Irish or they were Italian. So I get tired of the whole stereotype thing. But if you want to solve this problem, you have to recognize that big business and big government are symbiotic. You can't push one out with the other. When I'm on a leftist site and I say, oh, you have to go against a big business, they agree. But, oh, we have to have big companies do that. No, but you can't. No, it has to be stripped down to the street level where you can have accountability and transparency with, so you see it.
What that reminds me of is that we do not have laws which prevent the revolving door policy between regulatory agencies and business. And so what we have is what is called regulatory capture, where someone in, say, I'll just pick one, say the EPA is requested to take action on some huge pollution problem, will delay on it so that they can get a better job in industry. And then they'll come back to regulation when that's all forgotten.
Yes, even in the 19th century, after a while, the railroads figured out that they could just run the commissions themselves. It's just a matter of getting in there.
Regulatory capture.
Anyway, that's why. Let's not make the debate about immigration about racism or not. Okay, it's not. It's about how many jobs are here. Oh, where's black? My mother-in-law's black. They want to know, well, what does it do? Good does it do to bring in poor people from Guatemala? There's not enough jobs here, and we don't deal with currency manipulation.
I would agree with you partly. I mean, I would say that we have a huge problem with racism in this country, and we do need to look at it plainly so that we can separate it, as you say, from these issues, because they are more complex than just racism. And the example that you cited about the expulsion of Chinese workers from California is a good example of that. And that was when the Chinese workers weren't convenient. They were expelled, but they were expelled by the big bosses who conveniently added to the racism, which also led to whole populations of Chinese, for example, being shut into mines to suffocate to death. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly thing. It had racism and it had capitalism and it had class struggle. And so we can think through these things. We don't have to tell ourselves that we have to take a simplistic view. We're capable of complexity. We have amazing brains.
When I was studying at Berkeley High years ago, Reverend Dr. Collier, who was the head of the history department, he says to me, I don't know why the black kids today think everything is against them when it's nothing like what it was in the 50s up to the mid-60s. And this idea that we have made no progress or there's no opportunity is nonsensical. And I stopped myself there. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for your call. Well, that leads me to my topic, Worse Than the Confederate Flag, the book, The Bell Curve. I want to clue you to this book. One of the reasons I say The Bell Curve is worse than Confederate Flag is because it is hidden. It is in people's private libraries. It is in public libraries. It is in the libraries of sociologists and people who have political positions, and it is utter pseudoscientific crap. One of the best articles, concise articles I read about on this, was by Jim Narakis. And he wrote about the bell curve, which was written by Murray and Herrnstein. He wrote, while Murray and Herrnstein were generally considered as sober social scientists, their critics were sometimes identified with censorious political correctness. Washington Post columnist Richard Cohen is quoted as saying, both Murray and Herrnstein have been called racist. Their findings, though, have been accepted by most others in the field, and it would be wrong both intellectually and politically to suppress them, end quote. And Newsweek's Jeffrey Cloley said, as the shouting begins, it's worth noting that the science behind the bell curve is overwhelmingly mainstream, end quote. And these quotes are from 94, and I do remember them, because it raised the hair on my head when I actually got a copy of the book, which I don't seem to have anymore, and saw what a bunch of racist crap it really was. Skipping ahead in the article, nearly all the research that Murray and Herrnstein relied on for their central claims about race and IQ, this is in this book, The Bell Curve, which you will find everywhere and which is selling like hotcakes, was funded by the Pioneer Fund, described by the London Sunday Telegraph as, quote, a neo-Nazi organization closely integrated with the far right in American politics, end quote. The fund's mission is to promote eugenics, a philosophy that maintains the genetically unfit individuals or races are a threat to society. The Pioneer Fund was set up in 1937 by Wycliffe Draper, a millionaire who advocated sending blacks back to Africa. The foundation's charter set forth the group's mission as racial betterment and aid for people deemed to be descended primarily from white persons who settled in the original 13 states prior to the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. And speaking for myself and departing from this text, in other words, the data was paid for, and if you know anything about the collection of data, it's very important who pays for the collection of the data and who is set out to collect the data. Paid for by dyed-in-the-wool white supremacists. And the essential data of the book is thus, it's more than tainted, it's complete hooey. And also departing from this text, several of the contributors are directly Nazis, not just neo-Nazis. but anyway, in 1985, after Pioneer Fund grant recipients began receiving political heat, the charter was slightly amended to play down the race angle, but you can find them, and they're still obnoxious. And if you have any sophistication at all, you can see what they're up to just simply by looking up the Pioneer Fund by using a search engine on the web. This is, and this is what is backed up. This book, The Bell Curve, which, as I'm saying, is everywhere. I mean, this book is revered internationally, extremely dangerous, and in a sense, it is a perfect symbol of white supremacy in the United States because, I mean, think about the statistics of what we experience here in the United States, and let me look at the NAACP's comments on this. We see from 1980 to 2008, the number of people incarcerated in America quadrupled to 2.3 million people. And right now, the U.S. is 5% of the world population, has 25% of the world prisoners. We have this horrible police state. 3.2% of the U.S. population is under some form of correctional control. African Americans now constitute nearly 1 million of the total 2.3 million incarcerated population. But nobody's in because of racial animus, right? I mean, you can find all these stats, but no, there's no racist. I mean, you just can't point anyone. No one will say, oh, okay, I'm the racist who put this person in jail when they shouldn't have been in jail, or put them in for 10 years when they really shouldn't have gone in or should have been in for, you know, 30 days. One in six men had been incarcerated as of 2001. If current trends continue, one in three black males born today can expect to spend time in prison during his lifetime. According to Unlocking America, if African Americans and Hispanics were incarcerated at the same rates of whites, today's prison and jail populations would decline by approximately 50%. Now, why is this? 14 million whites and 2.6 million African Americans report using an illicit drug. Five times as many whites are using drugs as African Americans, yet African Americans are sent to prison for drug offenses at 10 times the rate of whites. But nobody's a racist. Who, me? I'm not a racist. Hey, you, cop that arrested, are you a racist? Oh, no, just perfectly fair. Well, hey, how about you, prosecutor, who came up with this long sentence and worked so hard to throw this person into prison? Are you a racist? Oh, no, well, I'm not a racist. Nobody is acting on racial animus, and yet, we see that we are in a system of racial animus. We are in apartheid. We are in a police state that is characterized by apartheid. And this book, Murray and Herrnstein's Bell Curve, is very much the linchpin of this. And so if you haven't heard of the Bell Curve, I want you to know about it. I don't want it to be sold. I would very much like for you to borrow a copy from the library, photocopy it, photocopy that, and spread it around for free and break their copyright. I'll be happy to be known as the point person who came out on KBOO at 9:58 a.m. on June 25th and said, photocopy Murray and Herrnstein's wretched neo-Nazi eugenicist pseudoscience book, The Bell Curve. But you need to know about it because it's just as powerful, maybe it's more powerful than the Confederate flag, because when you see the Confederate flag on somebody's car, you know where they're coming from. But when the bell curve is in some, you know, psychologist's cabinet, you don't know. And they're not going to tell you that they think, if they're white, they're thinking they're superior to black people. And they think that there's a scientific evidence for it, which is bunk and can be absolutely deconstructed on scientific grounds. The Bell Curve. Remember that, please, if nothing else from the show. And thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine as Chris Andre comes into the room. And do keep listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM physical transmission and on KBOO.FM. And in that manner, we go out to all the ships at sea.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, fanning off the phone lines after a busy hour with Teresa. We're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints, today featuring a report from a protest against the forced repatriation of Haitians from the Dominican Republic. Also, the concluding segment of the 15-part special, The Battle for Public Education in the 21st Century. At 11 on Between the Covers, Portland writer Polly Dugan talks about her new novel, The Sweetheart Deal, the story of what happens when a woman who thinks she's lost everything has the chance to love again. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, avant-garde filmmaker Robert McGinley talks about his films Shredder Orpheus and Orpheus and Eurydice. Local animation trailblazer Rose Bond talks about the PNCA Summer Intensive Program, Boundary Crossing. And Josh Leake shares highlights of the upcoming Portland Film Festival. That's all coming up after Air Cascadia, up next with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Thanks, KBOO members, for supporting your community radio station. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill four upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete form.